There you go. Bill Flores joins us this morning from D.C. Good morning. How are you?
Howdy, Scott. Great to be with you.
Listen, y'all have had warmer weather up there than we had down here.
Yeah, when I got up here on Monday evening, the temperature was about 65, but when I left Bryan College Station, it was around 50.
Yeah, so it's maybe that'll warm things up and move y'all along. You're coming back from Thanksgiving, and obviously, as seems to happen every year, you've got a laundry list of things that need to be attacked by the bodies of Congress.
Oh, my gosh, yes. One thing that a lot of people don't realize is that the federal government is only funded through December the 16th. And so we're going to have another big wrestling match over a continuing resolution to fund the government through next September. And in order to get that done, there are 9 appropriations bills yet to be passed. And the Senate is trying to jam all those together in one big piece to make it more difficult to separate the bad funding from the good funding. And then we've got a bunch of tax extenders that have gotten passed at the end of each year, including an AMT patch, a doc fix patch, which is not a tax extender, but another extender that's important to the medical profession. And then the payroll tax relief that was passed late last year expires on December 31st.
Okay, so let's back up and let's go back to the omnibus bill, if you will, and the Obama administration has put together what they call kind of minibus bills, in other words, little bits and pieces. And, you know, I was reading how really there's some Republicans who have dropped off on that, and leadership is looking to bring the Republican bloc back together to fight this. Where do you stand on the idea of this being passed incrementally, as the White House is trying to do?
Well, let me say this. I'm really disappointed that the Senate will not pass appropriations bills in what's called regular order. We worked real hard in the House to get the House back on the right track after the way Nancy Pelosi used to run it for the prior 4 years. And so we did our work the way we were supposed to. Unfortunately, the Senate has seen fit to try to it hadn't even passed the budget in over 2.5 years, and now it's taking all these appropriations bills, which it should have considered individually, and jamming them all together and leaving a lot of offensive things in there. Now, John Boehner has tried to go through and strip them out and repackage them in smaller pieces so that we have a better shot at trying to adjust where the spending goes. We've had a little bit of success with that, but it's not nearly as good as what I'd like to do. But that said, the overarching thing is that I don't like playing brinksmanship with the funding of the federal government, because if we have a shutdown, then that means our troops don't get paid. It means the Border Patrol doesn't get paid. The air traffic controllers don't get paid, things like that. And that's just not, I just don't like brinksmanship politics. And Harry Reid keeps forcing us into this position. Hopefully next year we'll get back on a better track, but I don't hold a lot of optimism for that, given the leadership in the Senate.
Well, in all honesty, I don't know that there aren't Republicans that are causing the problem too, but you know, I think you'll have to agree that brinksmanship is one of the very reasons why Congress continues to have historically low approval ratings.
I agree with you, and I agree with your earlier statement. There are some folks that are, and I'm just as conservative as them, but they continue to want to force a government shutdown. But this is not 1995, because the military funding has not been extended past December the 16th, and I'm just not a big fan of not paying our military when they're out there in theaters of war trying to take care of us.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. Let's break down some of these things that Congress does have to face. I've gotten a couple of listeners who have called and wanted to understand. Now, you're going to look at extending a payroll tax cut. Explain to us where that money would go if the cut were not extended. In other words, are we not going to be funding, for instance, Social Security at a high enough level because that cut would be extended?
Well, let me back up and tell everybody what the payroll tax cut was. It was a targeted tax cut. It was meant to try to stimulate the economy. When there's an employee working for an employer, the employer pays 6.2% into that employee's Social Security Trust Fund, and then the employee pays 6.2% as a deduction from their pay for the Social Security Trust Fund. What Congress did late last year under Nancy Pelosi is to reduce the employee's share by 2%. So instead of paying 6.2%, they'd pay 4.2% into Social Security. Well, Social Security is already bankrupt, and that's just furthering the bankruptcy of Social Security, just accelerating the bankruptcy of Social Security. And that 2% tax cut really didn't do a lot to stimulate the economy. The metrics are not showing that it worked.
Right.
It would have been better to do it on, if you had to do something that was going to damage Social Security Trust Fund, it would have been better to do it on the employer side so that the employer would have had more money to hire more people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's going to be extended or not, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say I'm not in favor of extending it because we need to be fixing Social Security, not accelerating its demise.
Sure. Now, you mentioned Doc Fix, so people understand we're running a story on that in our news this morning. We're talking a 27% decrease in Medicare payments after December the 31st. A lot of doctors obviously digging their heels in on that.
Right. Well, several years ago, there was a piece of legislation that was supposed to help ensure Medicare's long-term solvency. And in that, they said that doctors could not be paid at a rate higher than the sustainable growth rate. And the sustainable growth rate was based on a formula of inflation and increases in health care costs and so on. Well, if that sustainable growth rate mechanism had been in effect for all these years, doctors today would be getting 27.5% less on a typical procedure than they get today. Every year after that SGR was put into effect, Congress passed an extender to offset it and say, well, we're going to go ahead and pay doctors at the old rate, exclusive of the impact of the sustainable growth rate. And so now this Doc Fix has grown to the point where it's 27.5% of what a typical medical provider gets paid. And the impact is pretty huge. Over 10 years, it's $300-400 billion. It's a big number. And so every year it gets more and more difficult to pay for it. I don't know at this point how that's going to come out. I assume that Congress is going to fix it, but I don't know where we're going to pay for it. That's the issue. Somewhere down the road, we've got to come up with a long-term fix for Medicare. That's the issue that's on the table. That's what we tried to do in the Republicans' Path to Prosperity budget that we passed in the House back in April.
Bill Flohr is joining us from D.C. this morning. Texas is a right-to-work state, so this doesn't draw attention here nearly as much as it does in states where unions have a strong influence. But I know that today there's the National Labor Relations Board is looking at changing the rules that would shorten the time from when unions might come in and talk to workers as to when the actual vote for those employees to whether or not they want to go union would take place. That scares a lot of businesses because they want to be able to talk to their employees and have this question out on the table for maybe an extended period of time. So in other words, shortening the length from when unions come in to when the vote could be called to make something unionized. How important is that vote today, and what do you think will happen?
Well, let me say at the outset that this is important to Texas, given that it's a right-to-work state. What this would allow is union organizers to come into a non-unionized workshop in Texas and within a few days compel or convince a few employees that they need to have a union and have a so-called flash election.
Mm-hmm.
And the NLRB rules also greatly restrict the ability of the employer to distribute information about the pros and cons of being a member of the union and what that would do for the long-term employment of that company and things like that. It basically ties employers' hands and says, okay, over the next few days, we're going to have an election. You can't do a darn thing about it. It also compels the employer to turn over a lot of sensitive information in the employee files to the union, like email addresses and phone numbers and cell phone numbers, things like that. Texans ought to be rightfully concerned about the activity of the NLRB. Well, we have legislation this week to clip the wings of the NLRB on this issue, just like we're trying to do with their activities on the Boeing plant in South Carolina. But they have the NLRB is way off the reservation in terms of the way in terms of understanding the damage that they could cause to long-term employment in this country.
Now, and finally, it's been a couple of weeks since we talked, and Grover Norquist kind of had a raised profile on a 60 Minutes piece a couple of weeks ago. What he had done is he had put out a no-increase tax pledge, and a lot of politicians had signed this. I believe, were you one of the ones who did sign it?
Yes, sir, I have signed it as well.
Now, there are some who are now saying conditions have changed, and I don't know that I can be comfortable with that. Are you one of those?
Well, let me say that my interpretation of my no tax increase pledge is a lot different than Grover Norquist. And now, I understand he has modified his position somewhat. I'm in favor of coming up with a pro-growth tax reform so that we can grow the government's revenues because of increased activity. And so if to the extent we were doing pro-growth tax reform, I don't think that my pledge that my signing the pledge is violated, because basically what we're trying to do is come up with something to make the economy grow.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I would not be in favor of voting for anything that raises tax rates. And so, you know, and if any vote to increase tax rates comes up, I will vote against it and therefore stay within the tax pledge. I'd like to see Mr. Norquist come out with a statement about what the tax pledge really means, because some people have interpreted it very precisely to say you can't raise any rate in any circumstance, nor can you increase the amount of revenues to the federal government. Well, I think most Americans would be fine if raising revenues, because you've got a lot more people working, you've got a lot higher economic activity because of pro-growth tax reform. For instance, let me tell you one thing. You would not be able to, a lot of people like the fair tax.
Mm-hmm.
Under the Grover-Norquist pledge, you couldn't implement the fair tax because it's an increase in sales taxes, even though you may have turned income taxes to zero.
Sure.
And so we've got to cross this bridge somehow and find a way to address this tax pledge, and I think the best person to be able to do that would be Mr. Norquist.
Right. Bill Flores joins us on Wednesdays when Congress is in session. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time this morning, Bill.
Thanks, Scott. I'd ask our listeners to continue to pray for our country and our troops, and I hope everybody has a great Christmas.
Thanks.